Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. On this episode, Sean and Dan discuss the weather, how it's been frustrating for those still waiting to finish planting, and how great it's been for those who have planting complete.
This weather has been frustrating, but it's also been weather that has allowed this crop to get up fast, right? So what is in the ground that's had adequate moisture, temperatures have been amazing.
This podcast is made possible by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Your Indiana corn and soybean checkoff investments yesterday are paying off today. New research, new uses, demand creation, bringing dollars back to the farm. Check it out at yourcheckoff.org. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
Once again, we're at the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center in West Lafayette for this edition of the Purdue Crop Chat. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. Glad to have you along. And of course, I'm here with the stars of the show, Dr. Sean Castile, Soybean Sean. Hello.
Man, just come on down.
Yeah, that was my best George Gray from The Price is Right. I even have the same microphone that he has. People don't realize this, but I've got this Shure Super 55. I'm convinced that George Gray from The Price is Right has the best broadcasting job in the history of broadcasting jobs. He might be my hero. So, yes. Come on down. That's the job for me. Yes. Dr. Dan Quinn is here as well. That's Dan Quinn, not Dr. Quinn, medicine woman. That is, yes. Dan Corn Quinn.
Yes.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Eric.
Hey, a lot's happened since we last got together. Like a lot of planting progress has happened. Mm-hmm. That's probably why we haven't gotten together in a while. You guys have been like busy for once.
Well, I think some of us have been planting. I don't know if all of us have been planting. Poor Dan over here. A little breakdown. No progress.
Talking to my students, you know, we started planting, April 22nd, and, you know, we finished last week. We haven't finished. We still got a couple planting date trials yet. And I told my students, it's been over a month, and how many days have we actually been in the field? You know, six or six
hours.
Right? So I would say, you know, the common sentiment with a lot of farmers is that planting, you know, this year has been the F word. You can take it.
Fine.
I would say frustrating, but there's probably some other F words that some farmers have had, you know, depending on where they're at. So
must be a Michigan thing.
Yeah. Yes. Northern Indiana, Michigan. Yeah. That's usually where that's thrown around. Yeah.
You know, I put out a story just a couple of weeks ago, and I was a little surprised that I didn't get some emails, phone calls, and be like, no, it's my part of the state. But I said that, you know, arguably, Northeast Indiana has probably been hit the hardest by a lot of these rain events that we've had. And it seems, you know, I didn't get any calls or anything. Maybe it was true. Maybe, you know, something from the media that it was actually true, what was reported on.
Wow.
I know, it's incredible.
You're good for the year then, you're saying.
Maybe. You know, it really did seem like there was this swath, this area up there in Northeast Indiana where, you know, maybe some of the sandy ground up there, the sandy soils, like maybe they were okay. And a lot of those folks maybe were around at the time, again, a couple weeks ago, around 80% complete. Maybe they're, you know, largely done by now. But you move just maybe a little bit south of that, and that line just got a little bit wider as you went more north and more east. And those folks were like 0 to 1% complete because they just kept getting hit every 2 or 3 days with even just a little bit of rain that it just wasn't going to allow them to get in. And it just, I mean, I still don't know that they've gotten that stretch that they've needed of dry days to get in. And that would include the area of our chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, who's up in that area. And he's just like, I don't know. Like, once I get going, he's a relatively small farmer. He's like, I only need a day or maybe two to get this done, but
yep.
Like, I need one day to get some spraying done, and then I need another day to get in and get it done. And that's if I can really, you know, not have a breakdown of equipment. Mm-hmm. And with my luck, that's going to happen. So give me like two good days, three good days.
Yep.
and I'm good to go. And they just can't find it. Mm-hmm. Even with his, you know, magic voodoo of controlling the forecast. That's what they're dealing with up there. And I think that that's what a lot of folks are finding, you know, frustrating, the yes. big F word yes. In Dan's vocabulary.
Yeah, I think, you know, Northeast Indiana, you know, we at our Northeast Purdue Ag Center up in Columbia City, they just started late last week and finally caught some areas up there, or, you know, a stretch of weather last week where they could start planting. But yeah, that, I mean, that area of the state, I mean, it's kind of been that way. I mean, the last couple of years, they just have struggled, you know, in terms of getting planted, and then they struggle on the back end with, you know, maturation of the crops and getting them out in a timely fashion. It's just, yeah, it's been, they've caught a lot more rain where you move down to like the eastern part of the state, you know, around Muncie and, you know, where some of our research is, they've been a kind of ahead of, as I throw this microphone here.
Are you still frustrated? Still, you just want to throw something? Right. The hat hasn't come off. He hasn't thrown it down, but he's about to throw the mic. But
we give him a microphone that he can't turn off, and now he wants to, like, yeah. pick it up and throw it across the room.
I think so. I think he's jealous of all the yeah. soybeans I got yeah. in.
It's just been this type of year, right? But, you know, down in that area of the state, they've been kind of ahead of what they've had over the last few years. It's so, everything is just all over the board for the state. So far, I've seen corn southern Indiana that's waist high or higher, and then I've got corn that's still being planted. So it's all over the board from the corn side.
Yeah, soybean, and as far as that northeast, and I dare say even the southeast has had some of its own issues as well. I was home in Illinois a few weekends ago in the Memorial Day weekend, and, you know, planting progress there wasn't too bad, but it's just where these rains have been hitting, and have been hitting in, you know, those 2-3 inch amounts, and they're just mm-hmm. sitting there and taking forever to dry out. I think back to the Indiana side, this northeast, southeast area that's getting the inch or two of rain or half an inch, those soils themselves also aren't the type that are going to dry out fast, yeah. right? Yeah. So they aren't the sands that you're talking about, Eric, as far as the northern tier. That's fine that you got that sand, but you just go a little south of that northeast Fort Wayne area, you go to the southeast, those soils just don't dry out. And so it takes a while, even still getting a half or an inch of rain. But then you do the insult to injury of getting the 2 or 3 incher, mm-hmm. or the other insult to injury, as you talked about, you got the 10th or 2/10, that's just enough to make the top nasty, and so you're going to have smearing, you're going to have caking and growing of the gauge wheels and everything else.
As we look at the USDA Monday crop progress report, we did see a jump in Indiana corn planted, 83%. That jumped up from 73% last week. Indiana soybeans are 81% complete. That jumped up 10% from a week ago. Now, this week marked the first time this year that we saw crop conditions provided. In Indiana corn and soybeans both rated 71% good to excellent, only 6% poor to very poor. And math tells me that the rest of that would be somewhere in between, which isn't too bad, I don't think. Yeah. You know, some people just, you know, they just can't be happy. You know, they're just somewhere in the middle there.
Is that the Common Core math you got working there?
Yes, okay. Yes. I had to go a long way to get there.
exactly, Common Core math. Sorry.
Yes, but you know, I think that's at this point in the season probably pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. And I told you, I was doing the baseball circuit this weekend, going from West Lafayette to Fort Wayne, and then from Fort Wayne to Indy, and then from Indy back, mm-hmm. just south of Indy back to West Lafayette. From what I saw, Dan, you know, talking about corn here mm-hmm. first, from everything I saw, obviously just, you know, the windshield scouting, mm-hmm. And again, I'm no agronomist, but everything appeared to me to be pretty uniform. Everything looked all right. So the stuff that's in the ground, these rain events that we've had, they seem to be pretty helpful. We're getting some emergence, and, you know, this crop is growing.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of indicative of the crop condition ratings, you know, 71% good, excellent. Anytime we're in those 70s, right, you know, that's indicative of, you know, a pretty good crop around the state. You know, a lot of the calls I've had, you know, we talk about the variability in rainfall, right? It's very spotty, very localized areas where they've had issues, and a lot of it's been tied to, you know, they planted and then they caught that 3-4 inch rain. You know, I know down in kind of Shelby County, you know, Indianapolis area, they caught, you know, really heavy rains there after planting, and then, you know, northeastern, southeastern part of the state, even parts of the southwestern part of the state have caught some significant rains. So it's been very spotty and localized where we've had crusting issues, right, where we catch that really pretty heavy rain right after planting, and especially in those conventional till soils, and it almost turns to concrete, right, across that soil surface when you get those driving, pounding rains on that soil surface. So those have been some of the calls I've had. I've, you know, heard some reports of the, you know, getting the rotary hoe out of the back 40 as well. Actually got some guys that will actually run their planters again, and I've found that actually, I've never tested it. They just kind of have the row cleaners scratching over the you know, the individual rows, run the same AB lines that they planted on. I've heard, you know, quite a few farmers say that works pretty well too. But yeah, some localized areas with crusting, few calls on, you know, should we replant or not, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, what that plant population was at. Majority of those calls I had, we ended up just keeping it because they were in that, you know, 24 to 26,000 plant population. Some of them were more towards the northern part of the state where it just, you know, from an economic standpoint and basically maintaining a pretty good stand still, we kind of settled on, hey, you know, you probably lose a little bit of yield, but it's not going to be significant enough. And the economics, you know, side of that of doing the replant, and, you know, with their cornfields, they would have had to start over and, you know, either kill them off or tear them up, and, you know, you're even more delayed. So actually, a lot of the replant calls I've had, they've actually have kept those fields because the plant population was still there. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the crop that is up, you know, that was planted in good conditions, that's up and that has been catching some of these rains. You see a lot of side dress going on right now. I'm talking to some of my farmer cooperators this morning that were wrapping up their side dress, you know, around the West Lafayette area here today. So a lot of those crops that are up kind of got the moisture. Now they got that shot of nitrogen. They're really going to start. You know, humming along and taking off. So there's a lot of good crops around there, a lot of good corn, but there's some localized areas where they did have some issues with emergence based on how much rainfall they had.
Yeah, you think about on the soybean front, stand count and emergence of this weather has been frustrating, but it's also been weather that has allowed this crop to get up fast, mm-hmm. right? So what is in the ground that's had adequate moisture, temperatures have been amazing, right? And so you look at this little delay that we talked about the last couple episodes we've done this, right? Oh, we're not quite there. We got some of the March and Aprils, but then we just seem like we sat forever. And then once we caught that 6-hour, 12-hour, 2-day window, got a lot in the ground, and they're up and out of the ground. So, I mean, 2 weeks, they're not sitting for the 3, 4, 5 weeks that we think about. A lot of the early planter, timely stuff, up and out of the ground, stand establishment has been tremendous. And so that's been a difference. And you think of the emergence rates on this crop compared to 5-year averages and compared to 23, we're not as fast as 23. 23 is definitely one of the fastest planting seasons we've had on the soybean crop. And part and parcel with that is also the emergence. But the emergence of this 24 crop has been faster than the 5-year average. Again, that looks really good. And that's what it's about. Planting dates we often talk about, but it's really about when does this crop get out of the ground and utilize this season. And so what we've got out there, we've got some Aprils that are out, April 15th, mid-late April beans that are V6, so 6 dry fillets, and starting to flower. I mean, so this is really on the early side when we think about flowering. So that's setting the stage for some pretty good canopy development, good canopy closure. You know, my cutesy little rules of the thumb, if we can have this crop green to the eye by the 4th of July, if we can have it canopied by the 4th of July, that's a good spot for us. And I think we're going to have that on a lot of this crop.
You're listening to Purdue Crop Chat, brought to you by your Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoff Organizations. Visit yourcheckoff.org.
As we think about, you know, so we've talked about, you know, some of the folks that haven't been able to plant. We've talked now about the ones that are in the ground, out of the ground. It's kind of a better situation for them, obviously. Yep. Let's go back to the folks that still have to get some planted here. They have some decisions that they have to make at this point. We're here 4th of June as we talk today. we have to make some decisions about what it is we are putting in the ground now, right? Like, yep. are we changing maturities at this point? You know, we've talked about seeding rates and where we need to be. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about maturities. Sean, where are we at on the soybean front with that? What changes need to be made here as we have flipped the calendar at this point?
Yeah, so I think the big thing with the soybeans is for us to have a basic understanding of how the soybean will grow and develop, and that helps, you know, underpin our recommendations, right? Soybeans respond to photoperiod and heat units, and so one of the biggest things that we gain with timely planting is that we get more nodal development. Well, that's because we have more heat unit accumulation before photoperiod pushes into flowering, right? At this point, the first week of June, this is now we've got more push from the photoperiod than heat units, and so what ends up happening if we're planting this week of June, this first, second week of June, this plant is not going to get, you know, the 18 to 20 or 23, 24 nodes that we'd hope for with a timely planting. We're going to be more like a 15-noded plant. So that's 15 trifoliates, 14 trifoliate nodes. And so that's a more compact plant that has fewer positions for pods to develop, fewer main stem positions. And so the way we overcome that and try to gain some yield back is to seed more. So instead of, let's say you're a 15-inch planter running 140,000 seeds, we're probably going to have you up at maybe 10 to 15,000. Now, this is where it has a little give and take. If I'm going up to 150, 155,000 seeding rate this week in this first, second week of June on a 15-inch planter, we also are under better temperatures, better soil moisture. And so those emerge and get out of the ground quickly and get a good stand established. So we're in this kind of hazy period of, okay, do we even need a change, right? This first week, 140,000 seed rate, first week of June versus the first week of May or even the middle of April, the stand establishment rates are going to be a little bit different. Basically, we're going to say 140,000 right now. We should, in all rights, have more stand established. And so we're going to have more plants than our first week of May. So we're doing the job of having more plants. Now, if we go in the second week of June, I think we start to lose out on some more nodes. And so we're probably going to be pushing that 150, 155 number if we're going to next week kind of thing. I also put this in light if you have no-till conditions or you have anything that's going to be more compromised conditions, I'm probably more apt to increase that seeding rate. Maturity group, you bring that up. We're at a place right now, first, second week of June, I'm still not going to touch it. I think there's going to be enough natural push from this photo period that we're going to have a compressed growing season. We're not going to have to get all these heat units that corn gets to get it fully mature. We've got photo period that's always pushing us into maturation earlier, flowering earlier. If we're getting into the 15th, 20th of June, 25th, depending on the part of the state, that's where I'm looking to probably knock it back a half a unit, depending on where you're at.
Are there some agronomists that may disagree with you there? Like, are there some agronomists that are pushing that the other way? And I guess what's the argument there?
Pushing the other way in terms of higher senior rates or maturity groups?
Maturity groups.
And in what way? To cut them back or go fuller?
Because
there can be both on this.
To
right?
cut them back.
To cut them back in terms of if you're thinking about the northern tier, maybe they're like, oh, we don't have enough growing season. Again, this is where this combination of photoperiod and heat unit comes in to push us. I'm going to kind of twist it around. A lot of people that have grown up in, you know, the 80s, 90s of agronomy 101 and double crop soybeans, the mentality has been that you put a fuller season bean out there because you have a shorter season. And I still remember missing this question in agronomy 101. This is the exact question. It's double crop or it's late June planting. What maturity group do you plant? And I said a shorter one. And the logic back then was, no, it's a fuller season. And I've still wrapped my head around that. And so I've got data on this one to back up my answer on this. And we've done them down the southern part of the state where it's double crop country. We've done this up in the northern tier, is that you actually need to cut back a maturity group to have enough time the season to mature that crop. So, yeah, there's going to be some conflicting recommendations that come out of this from time to time. In the south, we've got more time to mature in the growing season. In the north, we flat don't. So give me 2 weeks, and I'm going to say cut it a half to a full unit to get it to mature.
What about in corn, Dan? What are the recommendations there?
Yeah, I think, you know, the corn side, the starting point always is, you know, we're – typically just looking at growing degree days. What's that heat unit accumulation? So majority of seed today, right? They'll working with the seed companies. They'll typically give you, you know, maturity dates of corn. You know, the maturity numbers on corn. It's often dictated by this is the amount of growing degree days it needs from when it emerges until it reaches maturity, right? So you can get that number from the seed companies, right? From, you know, whether it be 110-day hybrid or 98-day hybrid, right? What is my growing degree days that I need in order to reach maturity? And then, you know, I keep reverting back to some of the tools that, you know, the Midwest Regional Climate Center here has at Purdue, where you can get an estimate, right? It's not perfect, but get an estimate of what my first frost date is in the fall. And that tool, you know, I think it's the U2U tool from Midwest Regional Climate Center. You can put in, this is my maturity date or my maturity rating on my corn. This is when I plan to plant, right? So maybe it's June 4th, June 5th. And then it'll tell you here, this is the average first frost date that you have. And it'll basically give you an estimate of, you know, are you going to make it or not? And a caveat to that is that, you know, some of the work that Bob did and Peter Thomason out of Ohio State, it's been quite a few years now, 20 years or so. But they actually found that when we planted a little bit later, you know, that growing degree day requirement actually kind of shortened up a little bit. So, you know, kind of one thing that we find when corn is planted a little bit later, it'll progresses a little bit quicker, right? It's going to move through growth stages a little bit quicker. A lot of times the emergence is going to be a little bit quicker as well. We're planting into warmer soil temps as well. It's just going to move and almost kind of catch up a little bit. But actually that growing degree day requirement actually tends to be a little bit shorter with later planted corn. So that tool doesn't actually account for that. So you can kind of factor that in. Maybe it needs to be a little bit shorter, but that can be a starting point, right? We've had planting date trials up in Northwest Indiana. This is our third year. I've done a 96-day hybrid, 110-day hybrid at multiple different planting dates, and we had fungicides built into there. Actually, the last 2 years now, that 110-day hybrid up there, up in Northwest Indiana, we planted it a little bit earlier this year, but the last 2 years we've been in that June 1 to June 3rd, and that hybrid still out yielded that 96-day hybrid, and it still hit maturity when it needed to. And we just had the growing degree day accumulation, right? And we had, you know, the kind of a harvest where we were able to get it out and get some of the dry down. So that, you know, the starting point is how many growing degree days do I need to reach maturity? Am I going to be before that first frost date? You know, if you get into that northern Indiana tier, right, where we're starting to get in the first, second week in June, I'm probably going to start thinking about, hey, maybe I need to start cutting back some of that maturity of that corn crop. Because you do run into, you know, we saw a little bit last year where we did have some folks in northern Indiana that pushed it with their maturity, and they had really big challenges getting it harvested last year, where that moisture was just hanging on and just could not get it out in the field. And then some of that moved into mycotoxin issues. So, you know, you still want to have that timely harvest there. And, you know, it starts this time of year. Do they have seed, right? Do they have the availability of the seed? There's a lot of different, you know, aspects, right? You know, in terms of if I change my maturity, you know, does my seed supplier have the seed that I can back off of maturity, right? And what is it going to cost, right? So, but the starting point is understanding, you know, this is a growing degree requirement I need to get to maturity. This is when my potential first frost-free date is. Factor in that maybe that growing degree day requirement may be a little bit shorter. And I think, you know, Bob has some articles that he's put through Purdue that actually has some calculators to kind of help walk people through that, what that adjustment should be. Do I have seed availability to even do it for some of the seed suppliers?
So with this planting date and this idea of the corn, if anyone still needs to plant, one of the things we've talked about, you know, earlier is earlier episodes was about nitrogen, right? And you think about starter. So does the starter play here? Like, you know, I think about gaining in terms of growth stages, gaining in terms of dry down, and that's what comes to my mind. So is a starter a nice place to kind of get some of that back?
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, a really good point. You know, that's something with starter that, you know, all the starter work I've done, all the starter work that Bob and Jim Camerato did for years, the most consistent response with starter year in and year out is the fact that it typically progresses a little bit quicker, right? It's usually growth stage ahead, right? It might flower a little bit quicker. And the grain moisture is almost always drier at harvest, right? I'm a big proponent of starter, right? I think it, you know, it helps. You know, we're seeing a lot of corn right now go through that transition period with its root system and stuff, and having some nutrients there to help through that. I think some of the conclusions from a lot of the starter work done here at Purdue was just that grain dry down, right? Not just if we had a yield benefit or not, just that grain dry down benefit at harvest was able to pay for the starter system itself. So that's another aspect too, right? Yep. If you have the ability to put starter on, starter can actually help kind of move that corn plant along. There's still a lot of unexplained aspects of that, of why it kind of moves along a lot quicker and why it may be a growth stage or so ahead. But from that fact being a little bit quicker, it results in maybe being a half a point up to a point drier at harvest.
So just kind of realize, you know, pretty early on, it's the runt. If it's going to survive, it just needs to grow up faster, right? Yeah. That's what happens. Yeah. Hey, guys, let's take a break here. Let's come back. Let's talk about some of the other things here. Sean, I want to talk about wheat a little bit. We need to touch on that. It's starting to move along here. And we want to talk a little bit about fungicide. It's been paying off. We've been talking about this for years now about how it's been paying off, but we're in a little bit different of a financial situation than we've been in past years. So is it still paying off? Let's talk about that when we come back here on the Purdue Crop Chat.
Biodiesel is bringing value back to the farm, accelerating the demand for Indiana soybeans, increasing market value, and reducing greenhouse gases. The Indiana Soybean Alliance puts checkoff dollars to work, researching and promoting biodiesel in Indiana, growing production, creating nearly 3,200 jobs across Indiana, and increasing soybean ROI $36 per acre. The future of fuel is biodiesel. Learn more about biofuels at yourcheckoff.org.
Welcome back. It's the Purdue Crop Chat. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. Dan Cornquinn over there. Soybean Sean Castile right here. Sean, let's talk about wheat if we can.
Sure.
You are not just soybean Sean Castile. You are soybean Sean Cast Weedle. That doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work at all.
But I've got nothing else.
Okay.
You do talk about wheat. You are the wheat expert as well. let's talk about wheat. It's moving along here in the state. And I know that, you know, once that wheat comes off, we're gonna have some folks doing some double crop soybeans here. Talk about where we are with wheat. I know that some folks are getting pretty excited about this wheat crop.
No doubt. This wheat crop, we talked about how advanced the emergence was on soybeans, and the wheat just followed along this line of just being advanced, and so I think this is a great opportunity. So the wheat crop itself has looked pretty good. I think there's been a lot of people out there that have been trying to manage it for the highest yield potential as well as protect it when we had some of these rains. So you had some of the fusarium head blight sprays and everything else that, you know, indicated that we probably need to get out there, and I think they've done a good job. I haven't got any yield estimates on it, but I have heard some pretty early reports in terms of as early as next week in the southern parts of the state, starting to cut. And so that's a really good opportunity. You think about the 10th of June, give or take, to start cutting wheat. That gives you almost a full normal growing season to get that double crop soybean in. So I think the wheat crop is a good opportunity to get max yield out of that. You get the straw that people deal with, but then also to get the double crop. And in the southern parts, I mean, most of us, even in the southern parts, they're going to be doing a June 20th cut type harvest. Still, it can get a really good double crop if you get the timely rains and get 50, 60, 70 bushel beans in some rare cases. Or if they've got irrigation, they can really push it. What I really look as an opportunity, I think we had the same opportunity last year with how advanced the crop was, is the central to the northern part of the state. We talked about the northeast part of Indiana having troubles getting the corn and soybeans in the ground. Well, that's a part of the state that's got a lot of wheat. And I think there's a reason why we got a fair amount of wheat there is because we tend to have these wet pockets. And so why not get a third crop in there? So then we don't have to, okay, in this 2-day period, get all the corn and soybeans in. We've got a crop that's already growing. So then a third of our land, or at least a fourth of it's in wheat. So we don't have to worry about that. Well, that same ground now has an opportunity to get a really good yield on the wheat and maybe even get another crop, which is not always a given year in and year out. Let's talk about the central to the northern part of those areas. If they're able to pull the trigger middle of June, that's still in even late. It's getting on the edge, but even the middle of June to 20th, 25th of June, if they're pulling the trigger, that is a wonderful opportunity to get a double crop soybean out there. This is one I alluded to earlier that's going to be a case where we're actually going to shoot for probably half to full unit less than what that area is known for. So let's say you're running a 3-2, which is a fairly full season for the northern tier. You're probably going to be looking at a 2 to 2.5 maturity group and bump that seeding rate to make sure that you get that first seed pod height high. You're probably going to be looking on the order of 180,000-200,000 seed rate at the minimum, maybe 220, depending on if it's dry. If it's dry conditions, we're probably going to run a 220 seed rate because it's hard to get a good stand established if you don't have good soil moisture. And so then you're going to have pockets that have a little bit of water in the soil, some that don't. And so stand emergence and establishment is going to be critical. If they got water, life's a breeze in terms of, okay, water that stuff up. You want to get that bean up and growing as fast as possible. If you don't have the irrigation with the wheat and the potential double crop, you're definitely going to be seeding at a higher rate to overcome any issues with emergence.
With these rain events that we've had, has it been a bit more difficult to take care of this weed? I know, you know, spraying and some of the issues. Has it been a bit more difficult this season?
I think the issue with wheat would be if they're a ground rig or not, right? I think we've got a lot of people that are used to running planes on this, and so I don't think it's been as much of an issue as you might think about trying to get a nice herbicide spray on our corn and soybean crops because the fields aren't fit. Well, when we're looking at flowering back weeks ago, if they weren't able to get in with a ground rig, they should have been able to get in with a plane. It's just a matter of scheduling it. I haven't heard any major concerns with that, so I don't think it has been an issue. What I want to get into is now, if they've got into this wet cycle, I mean, you can't harvest with the plane, right? So then you got to make sure that the fields are fit. So even though the crops are maturing, you got to make sure that the field is fit to get in there without causing a lot of compaction and tire issues.
Well, we'll be hearing about this here before long. We'll probably have an update here on our next Crop Chat coming up in a couple weeks here, hopefully. When I made the tease here, Dan, we were talking about the financials. You know, people love when we talk financials because, you know, economist is what you are. No, agronomist is what you are.
Definitely not an economist.
but you know, we dabble. We dabble. You have a bank account, right? So
let me tap into that too.
Yeah. but really, you know, we talk about these things and people do kind of look to you guys and your research and try to figure out, okay, what's going to make the biggest financial impact here? And for years we have been talking about fungicides and we've been talking about how they have been paying off. It's kind of become this no-brainer, I think, for a lot of folks. Like, yeah, fungicides have been paying off. We might as well just put this, you know, in the rotation. Yep, just go ahead, mark it down. We're gonna do one this year. Mm-hmm. Because they work, they pay off. Those have been coming in some pretty good years for farmers that, yeah, they work, they pay off. Let's put it in the budget. This year it's a little bit leaner. Folks got to be a little bit more lean, a little bit more mean with that pencil. They've been sharpening it a little bit and cutting some things out.
Yep.
It's about that time. Are we cutting that out? What do we think, Dan?
You know, you're exactly right with fungicide, right? You know, we're wrapping up a multi-state study. I got my grad student here defending in about a month or so, and she did a lot of work with Shauna was on her committee and Darcy as well. And you know, we had fungicide trials from Michigan to Kentucky to here and even into Ohio now. And you know, one thing we noticed was the fungicides, right, is that when corn is $6, you know, I had her do, she kind of did a quick economic analysis, look at it, $4 corn, $5 corn, $6 corn, you know, look at it, you know, when corn is, you know, $6, $7, right? And another caveat to that is that every location we had had disease, right? So we did have yield responses, you know, in a lot of areas, but a lot of times it paid off at that $6. You move it down to, say, $4, right? And a little bit lower, it wasn't as pronounced, right? And that's, you know, often the what we face with a lot of the inputs, right? When you see the higher priced corn, right, you're going to see a lot more of these applications going on. Fungicide, you know, is a tricky one. You know, I think it's something in terms of economics, do we skip it or not, right? And that's something we just have to watch, right? And that's where, you know, getting into the work that Darcy does in terms of scouting your fields and looking for disease, right, and understanding what fields have had the issues in the past. And because if we have a year where, you know, tar spot blows up on us and, you know, we've seen tar spot, you know, reduce yield by 30, 40 bushels in certain parts of the state, even if corn is $4, you probably want to...
And it's worth it.
Fungicide on there, right? But if, you know...
Your math comes out. You do a good job.
Common core. It took me a while to get there.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think a lot of what you saw the last couple of years when corn was $6 is I'm going to spray just to spray because that's the way it is. I want to protect this corn. So I think, you know, being a little bit more mindful, something that, you know, we've been pushing and the plant pathologists have been pushing for a long time is that you just, where we see the best responses of fungicide, and that often is the best economic responses, is when I have disease, right? When I have disease, it's going to be more apt that we're going to see yield response and have that pay off. So being a little bit more mindful of, hey, watching that disease, scouting those fields, listening to Darcy and her work, you know, she, her website, you know, I always use her stuff in terms of they track the diseases, where tar spot is at, where is it showing up, these are the conditions, right? There's apps, the Tar Spotter app, you know, some of those other aspects that then help you get an idea of, oh, you know, I probably should be looking right now, and, you know, probably a pretty good indication that it could be severe in my area. So maybe I need to spray. So just saying, well, corn's $4, like, the heck with it. We can save money and cut all of our fungicide out. No, I probably wouldn't do that. But be a little bit more mindful of maybe we could get away with it if it does stay dry, right? Stays dry as we get in a tassel and stays a little bit drier there and we just don't have disease. Yeah, it's probably a good idea that maybe we could cut out that fungicide application. I think for sure what we're seeing, and there's some reports from Darcy this morning on our crops call, is the good old fungicide application right now. So the V5 fungicide application, I would say, you know, if farmers, you know, just want to give me money and maybe cut me a check instead of, you know, doing that application, they're more apt to, right?
I think other professors...
you do have a bank account.
Yeah, yes. I think other professors have gone to jail for that, right?
Yeah, they probably have. But you know, those type of fungicide applications, yeah, one, you shouldn't do it regardless, right? Because if we don't have disease out there, what are we just spraying and spending money? You know, that's fine. If you want to do that, you know, it's your money, you can do it, but that's something, you know, definitely skip that. You know, there's no disease out there, right? We're just, there's not going to see it pay off, right? And the pathologists have said this time and time again, it just doesn't pay off this early on in the season. So that's one we can cut. But the ones that R1 fungicide, the, you know, the R2, where we see some of that consistency with some of the responses to disease and scouting and stuff like that, yeah, we probably, you know, maybe be a little bit more mindful. But doesn't mean we shouldn't skip it even at $4 corn, because if we do have a disease year that really creeps up on us and gets pretty bad, it's still going to be economical at $4. But just have to watch it as we move forward.
We have to start the S word. You started the conversation with the F word. We're going to start the conversation or end it on the S word. Scout.
Scout.
Scout, a little nicer word, but I think that's the thing you're messaging here, and the same thing in the soybean is just to be out there, understand what's going on with both these crops, all three of these crops, and to adjust from there.
See, your kids are too young. You don't have kids. I'm having conversations about different F and S words. I've got a teenager. Teenage boy, we're having much different conversations.
They probably have new S and F words that we don't even know now.
You got that right. I coach a 14-year-old baseball team. They've got words I've never heard of. Oh, gosh. All right, as we wrap up this Purdue Crop Chat, Sean, what do folks need to be thinking about? Again, we've got some planting left to do still. We're still not mudding this thing in. We're still being a little patient, right?
Yeah. No, you've got to have field conditions that are fit. I mean, you're going to have any sidewall compaction mud, and it's going to chase you for a while. So whether that's in the replant or that's in the harvest of wheat, all that's going to have some impact on you. I think as this crop is developing fast, to be out there, be timely with the sprays. So sprays, I'm thinking about herbicide sprays. I've seen some fields that they pushed the planting because they didn't have much time, so they pushed it and over doing herbicide sprays. So if you haven't, get timely, get those weeds, get them burned down, get them killed. And if you have to go a little heavier on them, it's better to get them taken out than to have them take over. So I think that we're at the point of make sure we got good sprays to kill the weeds that are out there, and walk the field to see if there's any issues starting to pop up. And, you know, we do have some of the flowers that are popping up. I don't think that we're in a state where we need to be looking at any white mold applications of yet, but there's definitely flowers out there earlier than we've had in years past, so be mindful of that.
Drones, yep. Helpful this time of year, right?
Yep.
Do some of that. Dan, yeah, what we got?
You know, one thing I didn't touch on is it's an awesome time to walk your fields right now with corn. One, it's not over your head yet, so it's not a pain.
That's the only time that it's awesome to walk a corn
but,
field.
You know, this is a time of year and where, you know, we touched on a little bit where corn transitions its root system, right? So it primarily had been relying on the seed up until, you know, V3, that three collared leaves. But we're seeing a lot of corn now that's moving into V4, V5, that side dress timing. And corn, when it goes through the stage, you know, the middle school phase of its life cycle.
The awkward stage of life is what I call it.
The awkward stage. I tell students in my class, right, you know, I'm sure you all were pretty and, you know, just perfect when you were in middle school at this age, you know. Corn.
Not gangly and
yeah,
awkward.
Corn, you know, goes through a little bit of transition and, you know, it can look a little bit uglier and, you know, so.
Uglier? So that implies that it's very ugly. I love it. I do listen half the time here. I caught that one, Dan.
Less perfect.
The students ugly. Yep. And uglier when they get in middle school.
You got to keep them grounded. Right? So less perfect, I guess you'd say.
Oh, but, mercy.
And we're seeing it pop up, and I've been talking to some of the farmers I work with where they're seeing it pop up where you start to see, well, maybe we worked that field a little bit wet or we planted a little bit wet, where those compaction, those root issues start showing up right now. They maybe didn't show up the last couple weeks. It's a time where I'll have farmers call me and say, my corn looked great a week ago, but now it doesn't look so great. And a lot of times it has to do with that root system trying to get established. So it's a great time to walk fields, look at the crop, you know, and take a look at its overall health. And especially as we get into side dress, right, and getting that nitrogen and a lot of sulfur applications, good time to put on sulfur as well in that corn crop. But you can start picking up a lot of things, and you can also start picking up on some of the mistakes that went on during planting as well.
Let's get this planting thing wrapped up, and we'll chat again here in a couple weeks, guys, and we'll see how things are progressing, see where we're at. And I think it's probably about time we get Darcy Talenko in here and start talking about a few things. Yep. What do you say?
Yeah, we'll see if she's got any other letters to start us off with.
She might for you guys. I don't know.
Probably.
There might be hand gestures and everything else.
She's too nice for that.
You know,
she's far too nice for that.
You know that what we need to do. Dan brought it up. So there's going to be an awkward stage of life picture or two that's got to come with this
guaranteed.
Post. That's all I got to say.
Well, I've been in touch with his mom and dad, okay. So I'll see if I can get
them. They have plenty of them up there.
This has been the Purdue Crop Chat. We'll be back in again in a couple weeks. From Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The Checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.